I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome back to the Bell Witch Podcast with your witchy host, Swales, the Friendly Green Witch, and Jodie of Mother Serpentine Tarot. This episode, we focus on the Mother archetype and what that means in our daily family life. We talk about spirits and how to conversate with them and discover the unusual journey of how I became a witch. Bathing with your decks and duchess and wizards. Jodie shares her tip on how to create magical bath salts, and we shout out a lovely witchy biz. So make yourself a brew and come sit with us for an hour as we talk honestly about witching with kids in the 21st century. All right then, so how are you doing, Jodie?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've had a very busy and magical week. I've been working constantly on different events for 2 weeks straight now, without much of a break.
Burnt yourself
so
out,
it's
you
been really, really hooked. Yeah, absolutely. It's also really, really lovely to be able to read for so many people. It's always a really, you know, it's a really big privilege, isn't it, to be able to share those messages sort of day in, day out. So this week I've been practicing actual mediumship because I do get stuff through when I'm doing tarot readings, mainly like people's aches and pains or little bits of information here and there, but never anything really concrete. So I thought I'd try honing on that and see if I can get more information. Because it's gutting when you can see something next to someone while you're reading for them, but you don't know who it is. You don't know if it's male or female. You can just see a shape. And I think it'd be so lovely to be able to say to somebody, oh, I've got your mother with you or your grandma or what have you, and give them that information and give the messages, because I feel like those spirits are there for a reason, you know, whether it's to give a message or what have you.
They'll only give you so much information, yeah. Though, won't they? They're not always so open, and they don't always tell the truth either.
No. And it's a lot of it. Yeah, well, they're just like humans, aren't they, I guess. It's a lot of practice, but it has really, really opened up my readings. So for instance, I was doing a reading last week for somebody, and immediately as soon as they sat down, I saw all these blue lights around them, and I was like, oh, I can see blue lights around you. Do you work in like healthcare or the police or something? Because it was like siren lights to me. She actually worked in the hospital and her husband was a policeman. And I've had a few sort of channeled messages for people, but you know when you don't have the confidence to tell them that that's what it is. So I've had things come through, so I feel like, you know, and then it's always right, but you just don't have that confidence when you're starting out, do you? Yeah, I did actually tell a lady who works in a crystal shop. She owns a crystal shop actually, and she's been through a really deep healing journey, and that was something that had sort of come through. But I just sort of was like, you really need to share your healing journey with people. Like, I can't stress this enough, you must share it. The next day, she actually left me a message saying an author had gone into her shop and asked her to share her story and wants to write a book of her memoirs.
What?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I guess for anyone that's listening, it's interesting to know, isn't it, that sometimes that you can build these gifts, that people aren't like born able to see everything, the information comes through.
Absolutely, yeah. Everybody's got the ability in them. It's just a case of tuning into it.
It's like a muscle that you need to flex, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think as well, people expect when you do tarot reading, they expect you to be a psychic or a medium. And while I get messages through while I'm doing tarot, it's a complete different part of my brain, which is weird. So I might be able to feel somebody's aches and pains, or I might get a message through during a reading. But when I'm trying to tap into mediumship, the information comes from somewhere else in my head. So it gives me a really bad headache.
Yeah, I mean, I did always think when you did tarot, you weren't naturally talking to spirit as well, because that's what I brought up on. My mum were a psychic medium and a tarot reader, so I always thought the two things was together and that was all there was to it.
I guess it's sort of, it is in a way, but to use the muscle analogy, you know, you go to the gym, you do an arm workout, and it's all your arm, so your arm would be, you know, your psychic skills, but part of it might work your tricep, and you know, it'll hurt in different places and it'll use different muscle groups, but it's still the same arm. So it's all that psychic stuff. So you do, it is all psychic and spirit in its own way, but it is sort of like different muscle groups working. And also I think what you've touched on there is where people get their messages from, you know, because some people will get more messages through from spirits of, say, past loved ones. Some people will get them through from deity or from like a source. Some people channel just through themselves. And then there are people that read in like just a secular way, where they're using the cards as a therapeutic tool for reflection, and there's no energies coming through whatsoever. So I think it's always really, really interesting to consider where your readings are coming from and where you're drawing those energies from.
Yeah.
If you can ever know. I mean, obviously you can only suspect, can't you?
You can only wonder in amazement. Yeah. I've had a better week than last time. I've been a lot more spiritually plugged in. Been reading a really awesome book called Pagan Anger Magic by Tammy Sullivan. Because I get angry really easily, as you know, with my kids especially. So it's using that anger in your magic, collecting it, channeling it. And it is so,
that's,
it is
amazing,
really,
'cause it's like a farce.
It is such a good book. I read it all in a couple of days, and I keep going back and rereading bits of it. Some of my fellow witches did an online ritual for spring equinox, aka Ostara. And that went nice. We painted eggs and did a little prayer and drank tea and ate chocolate. It was lovely.
I've been practicing way more this week, or the past couple of weeks. My altar, like, it's got right now like fresh flowers and fresh incense on it, and growing flowers, and been doing more sigils, more prayer, more everything.
It's definitely time of the year, isn't it, I think, because things are coming alive.
Yes.
And that mirrors the witchy life.
I feel more grounded as well, weirdly. So for a few weeks I felt very out of my body. I felt like I was only in my intuition and only in my head, and I completely had my head up my ass, really. But it was like I was living through that, where now I'm doing these sort of, I think sometimes it's like practical acts of devotion that you have, and I was doing loads of like meditation and manifesting and all this sort of cerebral stuff, where now it's like having fresh roses on the altar, which I got mainly as like a gift for spirit, because they kept showing me fresh roses.
Ah, that's nice, isn't it? Buy ghostly some flowers.
They show you, I don't know if they do this for you, they show you things that they want to give people, which is another weird one. My granddad came through and he kept showing me big purple bar of chocolate. Well, my mum's favourite chocolate's Cadbury's, isn't it? When my nana came through, she was showing me my brother doing his nursing training, which he is actually underway with at the moment. She was showing him a bottle of Sauvage, and obviously I know him, so I know that he wears Sauvage. But if I'd have been a stranger to him, I'd have been like, oh, she showed me a little bottle of blue perfume. But obviously she was trying to give him some Sauvage.
No.
Yeah, which I think is nice.
Could be an excuse, couldn't it? Like, is that chocolate? Oh, the ghost told me to do it. It's a message from spirit telling me to buy myself chocolate and flowers.
We should do it, like, just like a spiritual gifting night.
Ah, it smells nice. So sweet.
I was actually thinking, and I guess this would be a suggestion for other people, but also an invitation to you. We should pair up and practice doing the readings and stuff on each other. So honing on like specific energies. I think the bell witches, the people who are listening, should also find people to partner up with and practice the tarot or do the witchcraft. Sometimes you don't want to do like a sigil for yourself, so it's nice to make one for somebody else.
Yeah. It does give you more motivation doing it for another rather than yourself. I'm also practicing on the spiritual side of life, the speaking board. Every Sunday night I have a little session and I put some of it on my Instagram, just talking about what came through. But I find it really hard to use because...
You're on your own.
I'm on my own, and also it's like I don't really need it because I'll sit there and stuff will just pop into my head, and it's like an unnecessary step for them to use this spirit board.
Yeah, because they can speak straight to you, I guess.
So it's unnecessary. Yeah, me and Jodie are doing a ghost night middle of April, so I need to practice bond with this board. It's going to be a really good night. Sold out, aren't it?
Yeah. So we've got like two sides. We've got one side where it's my uncle, who's a paranormal investigator, amazingly. So as well as being the Bell Witches and having our own businesses, we're now also Grave Encounters Paranormal, which was an absolute brainwave.
Oh, it's such a good name.
Yeah, we're going late night and we've got the Ouija board and obviously like tarot cards and our sort of psychic abilities. So obviously we'll do the Ouija side, talk to spirit as well, say what's coming through mentally for us or in terms of your clair senses. So for those that don't know, your clair senses, it's like the French word for clear. So they say when you're sensing stuff psychically, you get it through different clairs. So clairvoyance is actually seeing spirit in your mind or in front of your eyes. You have clairaudience, which is hearing spirit.
Clairsentience,
which is like knowing. Clairsensing, which is like smelling and everything, or taste. And there's like feeling and knowing as well. So they come under clairsentience. There is an actual word for the feeling side, which is what I get. And I think a lot of people think that the knowing and the feeling are the same thing and that they cross over. Yeah. For me, it's absolutely not. The knowing is like having a download into your brain and being able to know what spirit are telling you, but without hearing their voice. Where the feeling is like, I will get somebody's leg ache or back ache or kidney pain.
We should do a whole episode just on everything related to spirits and ghosts and stuff. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Like, or maybe around Samhain.
So we'll be doing that side during the Grave Encounters Ghost Night. And obviously we will report back here and let you know any findings that we had. But then my uncle's also a paranormal investigator and he's got, you know, the whole like high-tech side. Like, I do not know anything about this side, but like special cameras and like heat sensors and a spirit box, which is like I've watched them on YouTube and they kind of scare me a little bit.
They are a bit scary.
Spirit talk through them, but they're talking like this distorted way, so they'll be like you'll hear words in it.
But it's a radio that they use to make a sentence. I think that's how it works, isn't it?
Jump
around radio stations and it makes a sentence.
He took it with his daughter to the local graveyard. On the camera, they could see that there was a person stood in front of them. So his daughter was like, oh, what's your name? And it said, clear as day, but in this horrible, distorted voice, it went, it stays on my grave.
Oh, my God.
It gave me chills. Like, yeah.
It'll be good. Yeah. It'll be a good night. I'm excited and a little bit
nervous. Stuff is going to come through that. It's at least 300 years old. Is the pub. People say it's 300 years old, but it was made into stone 300 years ago. Before that, it was a wooden building. So God knows how old it actually is.
Wow.
Just as a pub, it draws in some right sorts. So I imagine there'll be all sorts going on. And you can see spirit in there anyway. And you don't have to be a medium or psychic in any way to see spirit there. People always say that they see stuff in there. So...
Cool.
So hopefully they'll come through.
All right, so next up, have you got your spiel?
I've got my spiel.
Here comes the spiel.
Maiden, Mother, Crone, the three faces of Hecate, the archetypal triple goddess. We've chosen to explore this phenomenon, this series of archetypes, during three episodes. In many Wiccan traditions and magical practices, the triple goddess has three aspects, known as the Maiden, Mother, and Crone. And each of these faces links in with the cycles of aging, rites and passages that many of us go through, phases of the moon, and the ebb and flow of our own personal power, as well as the cycles of the seasons. This is symbolic of the journey that many, but not all, women take throughout their life course, and many of us find ourselves in the not all category for various different reasons. So if that's you, you're welcome here too. We're just taking time to reflect and apply these to our personal lives. Many people feel the pull to some aspects of the Maiden, Mother, Crone, and they might balk at others or skip phases within this paradigm or feel fear, rejection, or even revulsion at some aspects of it. But collectively, most of us have felt some connection to the archetypes here, and they make excellent analogies and symbols for patterns within the great universe, deity, source. You may witness the Maiden, Mother, and Crone in your own life, or be aware of others meandering through these phases around you, and we welcome you into these archetypes in our own lives. In the last episode, we walked through the Maiden, so we now find ourselves welcoming in the Mother archetype. The Mother is the archetypal creatrix, and in many senses represents the literal journey through pregnancy and motherhood. We often see her as a radiant creatrix or mama bear, and she's a symbol of the abundant and fertile natural world as well. In tarot, she is the empress, the fertile creator, the divine feminine, and also that need that we have to create and put things out into the world. Mothers are seen as nurturing and protective and giving of themselves completely. And this is all really, really idealistic. And actually, many mothers struggle between their sense of duty and their sense of self. For me, the mother's traits can be a bit icky and have often left me personally, and I'm sure many of the listeners, if you've got kids, feeling a sense of failure. Ideally, motherhood brings gifts of mother's instinct, unconditional love, and a fiercely protective nature. But this isn't always the case. Hopefully many of us will feel those things throughout our own life courses, and motherhood may bring those aspects out in ourselves. And if not motherhood, other aspects of creativity and creating passion projects and endeavours. Because our babies aren't always children, are they?
Nope. That is real.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And actually, your journey with the mother in your life was a really wild ride, wasn't it?
It's interesting how within my childhood, I didn't discover witching the witchy life, even though it was all around me. It's almost like I was blind to it. Like in the last episode, I briefly mentioned my mum, and she was a really, really gifted psychic and tarot reader. And so there were a lot of spiritual elements growing up, but because my childhood was just so full of trauma and woe, it never seemed to come into me almost. And then growing up as a teenager, I was really, really angry and cross at life and focused on rebelling. I became a really hardcore goth with the white face and the big daggered teeth of vampires and stuff. It really influenced me fashion-wise. So even though my favourite films when I were a young teenage goth was Practical Magic and The Craft, which were about witches, I'm amazed that I still didn't sort of catch on to the universe going like, yes, be a witch. I was more interested in being than angry at life and painting my face white and moshing to Cradle of Filth.
What's really funny is like we both had our own sort of tempestuous, really, really emotional childhoods. And for me, that was what led me to witchcraft in childhood. And for you, it's like it actually was the opposite. Like a blockage.
It was, yeah. I think I just wasn't ready. Maybe I was just too pissed off to allow it in my life. But anyway, I lost my mum when I was 19. And I kept a few of the things that she loved, you know, like tarot-wise. And it all lived in a box through most of my 20s. And every so often I'd just get it out and have a look and have a shuffle. But I didn't know anything about tarot. My relationship with it was like it was a sibling, you know, because I was brought up with it. And my mum loved tarot almost as much as me, I believe. They were always around us. So I knew to look at tarot, like, and I loved the images and lay them out, look at them, remember them, put them away. It was only until I got pregnant with my firstborn I was a jeweller maker at the time, so I was doing fairs, making silver jewellery on a stall and trying to sell it, which is just like a really, really hard way to make money in general. And then this lass came over to me, Charlotte the Magpie Mama, and I was heavily pregnant at the time, and she said that you should come to my house on a Wednesday morning. All these mums come and we do creative Wednesdays. You're very, very welcome to cook. At the time, I was a bit like, who is this? Who is this person just invite me to the house? I don't even know who they are. Weirdo. Fast forward, I had a really traumatic birth with Florence. I was really lonely. And I remembered this Charlotte lass who invited me. And so I went to her house. And from that moment on, it's like I was alive. It was like a tribal gathering. It was creative. There were these, what they call crunchy mums, you know, that were baby wearing and milk sharing. And oh my God, it was beautiful. So it was all very goddess orientated. We did art a lot, making vulvas out of clay and being into the whole femininity thing. It was really good. Anyway, Charlotte did a box called Rainbow Soul Surprise. And then once I got it, the theme was witch. There were a book in it and a load of other stuff, like a little cauldron. The book was Witch by Lisa Lister. And I read this book and it spoke to me so much. Every single page was just like, yes, yes. And then, you know, that moment I was like, oh my God, I'm obviously a witch. How have I not discovered this?
I can't believe that was your first book. That one's on my blacklist. That's on my list of books.
But, you know, it was a good book for this realisation. Yeah, I mean, and it made me angry, and it is very turfy, isn't it? And it's very sort of womb orientated and stuff.
Pussy power.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is good for beginners, I must admit. And there's a bit of history in there, which is interesting. It can lead you down a lot of different pathways. Yeah. But I wouldn't be like, this is one of the best witch books as ever, because it ain't. But for me, we were just the craft to go on. It was life-changing moment. We started to do a lot of retreats together, like day retreats, mum and baby, pagan-oriented. And I met loads of people through Charlotte the Magpie Mama, people who still help me today. I mean, like Sally Golightly was a person I met through her, and lots of other amazing humans I could mention. And then with my second pregnancy, I was well into it then, the whole earth mother and stuff. I mean, I was still learning in this. I were yet to become more spiritual. But I remember I found a witch on Facebook and asked her to create me a spell for a good birth experience, because my first birth experience was just so traumatic and I didn't want anything like that to happen again. And she asked me those questions and she didn't want payment. And she was like, oh, I'll make you a spell bag and send you it in the post. And even then I was like, well, what's in it? What's in this bag? What is it? And she was like, it's a spell. And I was like, yeah, but what is it? You know, because I didn't know, you know, herbs and stuff are in a bag. Anyway, so she sent me this bag. It was a lovely little white thing and it had a crescent moon on it. And she'd had it on her altar with an egg and an assortment of things. And that, an amazing spell, and it worked. And I had the most beautiful water birth with Clementine at home in my bathroom, and everything went to plan. And I was on my own because no midwives were available. So I had an accidental free birth. It was the most beautiful moment in my whole entire life. And I really, really believe a massive part of it was because of this spell bag that this witch sent me for nothing. And I think that was like the last sort of spoke in the way I'm going to live my life, that realization that I can do all these things if I can use magic and manifestation and live the life I want to live. And now it's really strange, I can't actually find her anymore. I don't know who she is. I look through all my messages, Google names, and I just cannot find her. So if you're listening to our new podcast, do get in contact and be like, yeah, that's my spell bag, and I thank you for an amazing birth. Yeah, so, and then after that, then it was just like a landslide of living like a witch and saying I'm a witch without any doubt. But I just find it bananas that I got to the age of 30 odd and didn't put two and two together.
I think it's lovely that that motherhood, what led you there? And also your own mum as well, in her own way.
She never would have identified as a witch. To her, a witch was like really negative and eating children and you know, like grot bags type job. She wouldn't have, she would have been offended, which is such a shame. But I think it's changed, hasn't it, in this sort of few recent years. It's not a negative thing. Whereas it, I think it used to be quite a negative thing when my mum were young.
It's one of those things that really just varies depending on who you're speaking to. So I've had people before where they've been really, really positive and embraced it, but I'm kind of in my own little bubble. And then you have people where they are quite negative and still a bit of work to be done in terms of awareness about what Wicca and witchcraft and paganism and
all the myths that we have to shake off.
Yeah.
Like, we don't believe in the devil and we don't slaughter any virgins and...
Yeah.
There's no black magic, it's just magic and how you use it.
For me, becoming a mother really, really changed my practice. Well, obviously, as a child, I went from sort of very playful witchcraft, like playing with fairies, doing meditations, getting into like herb crystals and things like that, pretty much into a more traditional path. I'd started going to Moots in Leeds. So if anybody is watching, no matter where in the world you are, if you're interested in paganism, your local Moot is an excellent way to meet like-minded people. And in Leeds, we have one of the best Moots because it's run by a really, really highly trained high priestess and can help you to access training with her as well.
Can you mention the moot name?
Yes, it's called the Raven's Rest Moot.
Pretty good, isn't it? Because essentially it's networking for witches.
You'll go, you'll see. It's very much, I remember the first time I went, and you've got to think I was a teenager, so I felt a little bit vulnerable and wasn't even old enough to be in a pub yet, so I didn't really know what to expect. But you go in and it's like, we are the weirdos, mister. Yeah. All the witches in a corner. Having their drinks, you feel really, really comfortable and casual chit chat, but obviously about witchcraft and paganism. And then there's usually a workshop, so usually you learn something. And some of the ones, because the Raven's Rest, it is run by a Gardnerian high priestess, the workshops are very, very in depth and very sort of academic. Some moots you'll go to and they're a little bit more, they're a bit softer. They're a bit, you know, nice things to do, but the information in them you can't always bank on, if that makes sense. Where the one that I went to was really, really sort of information overload, quite academic. So I was kind of plunged in at the deep end, really, and ended up on this traditional path. And 18 began doing the training towards initiation and really, really loved it. Was absolutely in my element, living my best witchy life, or so I thought. And then I got pregnant and of course everything went out of the window because I was
spanner in the works.
Yeah, well, I was 20 when I got pregnant with Eartha, and I was doing my degree in costume design and doing my initiatory training, and essentially just dropped off of everything to throw myself into motherhood. And because I was already living quite a radical and kooky life anyway, to me it seemed really, really natural. Even as a first-time mum, I knew that I wanted a home birth. I knew that I didn't want to have any medications during birth or any toxins or anything like that. I found my local Steiner and, you know, I was very into the idea of like breastfeeding and baby wearing. I didn't breastfeed for long at all. It went completely tits up with Eartha.
That's another podcast series entirely, because
yes.
I reckon we could talk about so much.
So my journey with having Eartha was, it started out, I was essentially, I began volunteering in my local Steiner during pregnancy, and I was like a sponge soaking up all this information about nature-based child rearing and the evolution of the child's soul and the ways that you can sort of protect and preserve a child's imagination and sense of wonder and beauty in the world. So that was my focus. And in Steiner's, it's not traditional path at all, but it's very, very ceremonial. So I went from volunteering to actually working there. And every morning we'd go in, we'd sort of have like a little almost ritual of holding hands in a circle, setting our intention for the day and then going about our work. The day is very rhythmic and ceremonial. There are songs sung before dinner time, you know, to summon the candle fairies, and it was just really, really whimsical and beautiful and really captured my imagination and my heart. It was a perfect blend of magic and creativity. Obviously, I'd sort of come away from my training, my sort of more formal, more academic, more cerebral training, and into this really woo la la land. A lot of the mothers there were doing what they call shamanic path. I would say that it is more animistic. To me, shamanism is closed practice for the people in the Tungus tribe, you know, the Samai people. And I always think it's, you know, it's really, really good to think about westernized names for what you're doing, and animism has been a long-lived practice within all magical working, where you essentially use drumming to achieve a Gnostic state and to access different realms. So these are all things that go hand in hand with paganism, because there are the views of different realms and different sort of modes of reality, and using the drum to access and have strong visions of those different spaces, and to tap into your guides there and draw on them for support. So I began doing this work myself, and it was life-changing. If you wanted to do this work for yourself, then you would probably be looking at either finding a shamanic practitioner to do the work for you, or looking into books about, you know, sort of shamanic practices, and it would be called shamanic in those books. The disagreement is just a Jodie with both. But in terms of more sort of animistic magic, also druidry uses these techniques. And so it's this really beautiful rhythmic drumming that changes your brainwave state. And for me, that was perfect, because it was a way of calling to power. One of the essence of this work is sort of calling to power and finding your own power, getting rid of anyone, you know, like we've all had people around us that have been soul suckers, like getting rid of any sort of negative attachment so that you can claim your own power back. What you don't realize is that actually we give a lot of our personal power to our kids, and we also take a lot of their personal power, and that doesn't help anyone. It's not a sign of a healthy relationship. It's a drain on us and a burden on them. So this drumming for me was a way of healing myself, but also healing my family line, both past and future. And it helped me to tap into a more, I guess, primal way of practicing magic, feeling powerful, and also meditating in a way that was quite different for me. And from there, I actually began to question whether Wicca was for me at all. And for a while, I identified as just being pagan.
I think when I met you, you said you were just pagan.
Yeah, I sort of differentiate a little bit. So, like, obviously, I'm on, like, a Gardnerian path now. I think most Wiccans that you meet aren't. Most Wiccans are just sort of practicing eclectic witchcraft. This sort of path that was all about self-exploration, and it was about finding my feet in motherhood, really, because, you know, I had a really, really traumatic journey into motherhood. My pregnancy was amazing. My birth was amazing. My daughter was amazing. And I was a natural mother, and I was really, really supported in this lovely community. But I was in a really, really severe domestic violence relationship, and had to flee my home with just my baby in her sling and a bucket full of mucky cloth nappies, and then live on my parents' sofa for months until I got emergency housing. I was really, really on this journey of finding myself as a mother, and I was kind of thrown into it on my own. Even though I had family support, my family parented very, very differently to how I did, and they saw the world very differently to how I did. So for me, this tapping into myself was much more important, and this having like daily rituals and daily ceremonies, and, you know, this bubble of Steiner education meant that I could bring that magic and imagination and creativity into my daughter's life. But really what I didn't realize was actually it was a step back from actual magical working. And it was only when my daughter began going to nursery that I really plunged back into it, rather than doing like sort of self-exploration work and meditations and this drumming and things like that, that were more, you know, like I say, more primal and more a way of tapping out, really. I began wanting to engage with something a bit more cerebral. So she went to nursery and I began really putting my heart and soul into doing my tarot.
I think from both of our stories, at the time we both had community, didn't we?
Yes.
Of support, yeah, from parents. It was at the time, especially with newborns, something you really need, because it can be quite lonely having, yeah, a newborn, absolutely, stuck to you all the time. They're, yeah, cute, absolutely, but bloody hell, they're boring.
I think at that point, all the energy that I had went into Eartha.
Yeah, of course.
It all went into her. And any energy for anything magical or whimsical also included her, where now I have a bit of a balance. So we do things like our camps that we go to, which are very family-oriented, but I carve out time to do magical stuff for myself. Yeah. And it's not all about claiming back something that's been taken from me. So for me, like, now I'm at the point where I'm always tapping into new things and tapping into things that are purely for me, where when Eartha was little, it was like I was always trying to claim back something that had been lost, and find myself as a mum and figure out my identity as both a mum and a witch. And didn't have an altar. We had a nature table instead, you know, very Steiner-based. No. So actually my altar's very nature table-y now. It's got like plants on it and pine cones, and I always have like a little flower bowl where I put seasonal flowers in it.
Motherhood does take a lot from you. And I think a lot, especially in the Western world, where we don't have a village community to keep us topped up in different ways. I mean, I really struggled in the beginning with Florence. You did feel like you lose yourself because there's no time to do anything. It's really natural and normal that babies are needy when they're little. Yeah. And then it's almost like you got to be careful, because it can become resentment and sadness. You've got to brush yourself off and look for things
again.
It's
a shift in your psyche as well, isn't it?
It is.
So interestingly, when I had my second baby, Winter, so Eartha's 9, Winter's 1, and when I had Winter, I was able to sort of maintain my own practices, maintain my own studies, and keep my witchcraft as it was. Where with Eartha, I think it just awakened new aspects of that and what witchcraft can look like in real life. And it can be, you know, going to a quarry and watching the kids run around while the adults nurture a fire and carry the babies in slings.
Get your drums out. Oh, you're so amazing that you found it so early on in your life. And I do feel a little bit envious of that.
I feel like there'll be a lot of listeners as well where they look at what we do and see it as quite radical, because we are everyday witches. Like, it's something that permeates pretty much every bit. You know, you stir a cup of tea, and like I stir it, you know, a certain amount of times in a certain direction, or stir sigils into it or what have you. And yeah. I think that, you know, that a lot of it's like radical or like too far. And I just want anybody who, well, A, it isn't.
It can be tiny little things, can't it?
For anyone that wants to keep their practice sort of away from their children, that's also valid. Like, we've both really incorporated it into our family lives. But I'm sure there are parents listening who
just want it for themselves.
And don't want. Yeah. I think there are really, really reasonable fears that you'll make your kid the strange kid, or, you know, incite bullying or opinions from people or reactions from family or what have you. And I just want people to know that you can incorporate witchcraft into your own life in a way that's very discreet as well, if you'd like to.
I mean, I do feel that myself. I can tell the older I get, the more sort of eccentric I get, and the more I don't give a shit I get. But then I always worried, you know, when my kids don't get invited to the party, like the birthday party, I'm like, oh my God, is it because of me? Because they know what I am. And
with Eartha, when I was pregnant with Eartha and had Eartha, I felt really, really in my element as a witch and a mother. Those sides of myself joined up really, really nicely. So I felt very magical when I was, you know, initially breastfeeding her. But when I was baby wearing her, I was putting her in these all natural clothes. She was in cloth nappies, and I did elimination communication, which is basically pottying from birth. And to me, it was like I was on this mission to use my parenting in, as a way that it was quite radical, but that I felt tapped into my own primal nature, you know, because we are just monkeys with delusions of grandeur. And also that I was preserving the environment in some way. And I had all these notions that when I had my second, it would be the same. I bought basically a lifetime supply of cloth nappies. I bought the slings. I got her the potty ready for elimination communication. I really, really prepared for breastfeeding because it had gone really wrong with Eartha, and they were actually complete flip. So Winter had a really, really difficult birth, and she was born with a real stiffness to her that meant that I couldn't baby wear her. She was £10.5 as well, which was huge, but it meant I couldn't baby wear her, couldn't use cloth nappies because her hips wouldn't bend for me to put them on her. You know, the idea of infant pottying her got swallowed up, you know, in hospital appointments and osteopathy appointments and occupational therapy and physiotherapy. And the only thing that I managed to do with her was the breastfeeding. And I felt like it was just a complete flip in a way. So with Eartha, I felt really, really powerful because everyone could see that I was this Earth mother and doing all this like natural, magical woo stuff. Eartha would have like her amber necklace on and her big cloth nappy with its funky patterns on. And, you know, with Winter, all that went out of the window. And actually my parenting with her hasn't been environmentally friendly or sustainable at all, but it's been what was necessary. Yeah, and also for my lifestyle. But in a way, like with Eartha, I felt very magical while I was doing those things. So I felt like even when I wasn't practicing actual witchcrafty stuff, I felt like I was living in a very magical way, and I felt very in tune with my personal power, and I felt like I was on my mission in Earth. And then with Winter, it's very different in not only is it not environmentally sustainable, I don't look like this really cool Earth mother and don't always feel radical and powerful. But then I have my own life, which is very, very magical. But that's quite separate from both kids.
Transformed, aren't it? And morphed.
Yeah.
Whereas, again, I'm the other way. It was very just for me. My escape, the way I exist, because a knock-on effect, my mental health improved dramatically, and I put that down to witchcraft and pagan living as well. Now, this sort of past year, did the witchy camps together, and so now I'm inviting my kids to be part of it if they want to, and sometimes they're interested and sometimes they're not, and that's okay, but it's not like off limits, whereas before I was like, don't touch my stuff, don't touch this crystal, get out my notebook. But now, you know, they're allowed to draw in my notebooks. And
yeah, I think that's also part of it, is knowing. And this is something that a lady, she's called the Good Blair Witch on Instagram, is an amazing Wiccan lady who's local to us. And it's Lisa. You've met Lisa before.
I have.
And she listened to our podcast, and she was saying that sometimes, like, she felt like she couldn't have an altar because she was like, the kids will just put crap on it. And part of it is just pushing through that stuff anyway and accepting it as a fact of life. And weirdly, when you find that, like, Book of Shadows has been scribbled in it or what have you, first you care, but then eventually, you know, you look back over your notebooks and you find your kid's stick figure that they drew of you like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And you just sort of cackle at it and move on.
Oh, it's lovely.
And I think that's part of it as well, is that like witchcraft isn't always aesthetic.
There's actually a witchy aesthetic, and it is beautiful.
Yeah.
But it can be a little bit like, oh shit, I can
alienating.
I could never be that good. I could never be that clean and neat and tidy.
This week's practical tip is one of mine, and the reason that I'm sharing this is because it's an excellent way for people who are mothers to restore after a day, or people who aren't mothers to restore themselves after a day of slog of life.
To mother yourself.
To mother yourself, yeah. But also, it's an excellent place to have a spell, is the bath. So I think, personally, for me, I have at least sort of 3 baths a week, and that's my space to recharge. It's sacred space for me in that time. I might do meditations, I might do Reiki, I might do spells, and I know that I'm not going to be interrupted. That's me time. So what I thought was that I'd share with you guys some bath salts that you can use to either just bring a little bit of aromatherapy or herbalism into your life, to recharge yourself and feel and smell more witchy, but also that you can use during carving out time to connect with that magical part of your life, whether that's as a precursor to doing a bath spell or whether it's a bath spell in itself. I tend to use whatever salt is available. I like to go to B&M or Home Bargains, and they often have like a big bag full of Epsom salt or sea salt. It can be good to mix these together. Epsom salts are really, really good for those of us with chronic illness. I really like Epsom salts as a chronic illness sufferer. And sea salt also is really, really good at restoring minerals to your body, but also as a magical cleanser. So if you do use Epsom salts, then use a bit of sea salt as well. So I would personally use 2 cups of Epsom salt and then a cup of sea salt. And if you have Himalayan salt, then that can be really, really good as well. But it's just whatever they have in the supermarket, because, you know, when you're in B&M or Home Bargains and you see these bags, they're really cheap. They're usually less than £3 or £4. Get a lot in there. I usually put about 1/2 a cup of baking soda in as well. Make sure it's baking soda, not baking powder, because this helps the essential oils to disperse, is something that I've read. And obviously, it's not harmful to anybody, so. And then you want to add in your essential oils. Now, what you don't want to do is use essential oils neat. You do want to dilute them in another form of oil. So I know some people do use other substances, but I like to use coconut oil. This will reduce the shelf life of your salts compared with things that people use.
Carrier oil, isn't it?
Carrier oils, yeah. Yeah, but I think any carrier oil's fine, but carrier oils typically will reduce the shelf life. So carrier oil I tend to use if I've got castor oil or almond oil or coconut oil, and I tend to use like about a tablespoon or 2. Then I use essential oils, and I aim for about 20 drops of essential oil, and a nice mix of oils for whatever you want to use is fine. So if you want to bring joy to your day, or revitalize yourself, you might use lemon and sweet orange, rose, say. One that I really, really like to use in terms of baths, I really, really like to use frankincense oil in mine. So my go-to would be frankincense and rose, and I would use about 10 drops of frankincense and 10 drops of rose. Might add a little bit of lavender in there or a little bit of orange to uplift the scent a bit. But you can really, really get playful with whatever you've got in the cupboard here. You can go completely wild and add a few drops of whatever you've got available. I wouldn't add more than 20 drops though to this. To do spells for self-love, I would recommend rose. I would say that rose, lavender and chamomile are all excellent additions in terms of flowers as well. Some people like to add flowers to their baths or petals to their baths, and I think it's really, really nice to add these to your bath salts. But I know some people don't like the residue that these leave around the bath.
They do make a mess, don't they?
Yeah.
And then it goes down the plug hole and then it fucks up your drain, and then
well, you kind of have to scoop it out, don't you, as it goes. Yeah.
Or you could put it in one of those bath tea bags that are quite handy.
Well, speaking of tea bags, if you are wanting lavender, chamomile, rose, and you're a bit like, where the hell do I get those? They are actually widely available in tea bags, and that is essentially how I cheat at adding herbs to my bath. So I literally have chamomile tea bags, and I've checked the ingredients on them. It's just chamomile, and I will add those in. I've got lavender and rose from Swales's garden, actually.
It's such a good tip for getting tea bags. I would never have thought of that, like bathing in a tea. It's So what's not to like?
Yeah, yeah. In terms of adding rose petals in, what can be really, really nice is if you've had fresh flowers on your altar, then when they're not quite wilting, but you know they're going to go a bit past it, take them out of the water, cut them, you know, so you've got like an inch or two of the stem left, and then allow them to dry out for a couple of days. And you can use those in your bath as well for a bit of rose, which is nice. But essential oils, you can't really go wrong with. And you can get really, really, really playful with them. So my go-tos, I really like lemon. I really like sweet orange or tangerine. I like a little bit of peppermint just to kind of uplift scents. And I have a thing for tree resin essential oils, which are really spiritually purifying. So I would say if you want in a ritual bath spell, or if you're wanting to connect with spirit or connect with your intuition and sort of cleanse energetically or pre-ritual, a good go-to would be to use frankincense, copal, myrrh, benzoin, essential oils. Yeah, and they're all from tree resins. But yeah, for self-love or just a general unwind, lavender, rose, tangerine, lemon go really, really nice together. And patchouli, you can't go wrong with either if you want to smell like a witch's armpit.
Also, before I get in the bath, I add the salts and then I smoke cleanse my naked body before I get in.
Yeah.
And then I smoke cleanse the water, get in and pretend I'm sort of sinking underneath the earth.
The oils all have their own unique properties. So you may have oils that you have that work for you. So say if you have muscle pains, you might want to use a bit of black pepper oil. But yeah, aim for about 20 drops of essential oil all in all. I wouldn't say more than 10 drops of each. But if you want to, you could add a jar of moon water or sun water. If you do Reiki or any other energy work, to add to your water to sort of charge it a bit, or you can use magic to charge it. A really nice way of doing that is just imagining beautiful ribbons of energy in whatever colour suits your needs for that day. So if it was for sleep, you might do purple. If it's for emotional health, you might do green for your heart chakra. You might do silver for intuition or spiritual work. And just imagine ribbons of that energy flowing through your hand into your water. And if you remember our sort of little spiel about sigils last week, you could create a sigil and, you know, trace that into the surface of your water. Don't be afraid to get really whimsical.
I mean, how long do you spend in the bath? Years.
Sometimes I have like 3 baths a week if it's been like a bad week or if I'm having like an emotional issue that I need to shift. But I would at least have 2 baths a week. I will work in the bath. If you've had an online reading with me, you know, one of the reasons that I don't do video readings, you know, whack people's cards, I get them shuffled, get my picture taken, and then get in the bath, and I can do your reading in the bath. And then we're both happy, aren't we? Because I'm there in my oils with my intuition, blaring away, feeling comfortable, stewing like a potato, and you actually get a better quality reading for it.
But yeah. Then what if your tarot cards fall in the bath? If you breathe out,
I took a photo before.
You're going to say if you breathe out and they'll just go, wee, you're like, no.
No, so what I do is, you couldn't do this with bone readings or ribbon readings, unfortunately, but with the tarot, I will pull somebody's spread. So I'll connect to all the different spirits that I work with, and then I'll pull the person's spread. I'll begin their reading while I'm shuffling the cards and getting my pictures and confirming that the spread's for them. My bath's running, get the pictures sent, and then I'm in the bath. If there are decks that I still like, but I don't care as much about, I will take a card in for meditation purposes.
Yeah.
And I've never dropped one in yet.
Don't jinx it.
But I've got these little, I'm sure they're from Hobbycraft or somewhere. These little, they're just literally a little log slice. So they're like a branch into rounds, and it's got a slit in the top and you can slot your cards in.
Tarot cards in the bath. I've dropped definitely books in the bath.
In fact, I did once, I had a deck that I'd wanted for ages and I'd finally bought it, and I went to take it up to my mum's. I'd put it in the top of the push chair. I'd put this deck in and 2 cards had slid out, the Fool and the Magician. Well, obviously it was torrential rain. I went to walk to find them, and they were both in separate puddles. completely saturated, and that deck is still in use. I dried the cards out and they're absolutely fine.
Amazing.
My deck that I read for most of you with as well, like someone once dropped one of the cards in their glass of beer and it was fine. I don't even know which card it is because you can't tell at all.
Get them laminated and then they'll be waterproof because they'll wipe clean.
They should do a bath deck, shouldn't they?
They should do a bath. I wouldn't be surprised if it already exists, actually. So this week, I was thinking of a business to mention with Mother in mind, and I kept coming back to Witch Casket UK. So this is a business that started off as a shop in Yorkshire somewhere, and it's run by a mother-daughter team, Deb and Ella, and they started the Witch Casket box in the shop as a monthly subscription. Amazingly took off and became really popular, and eventually they closed the shop, not because it was hard to run a shop, but because Witch Casket UK was just so, so popular. And it is a really, really cool box. I mean, it's such high spec and all the packaging is really beautiful. Care and attention on the designs of stuff. I think you get a lot of exclusive things that they've designed and created within their little team. There's a theme that runs throughout the box every month, which is beautiful. For people who are new into it, who don't have anything, have no idea where to start, it's an ideal thing to start collecting for a couple of years, and then you'd have a really good set of Witch Casket stuff.
What sort of stuff do you get in there?
It tends to be, there's a booklet with some information, you get a spell packet, a tea, a postcard by an artist they've supported, and then it's things like candlestick holders, they have incense and candles, boxes, trinkets, crystals with sigils on them, spell bottles, glass mugs, and all kinds of cool stuff. So there's a lot of accessories. I had it on and off for about 3 years. I absolutely love it. And then lack of money.
Yeah.
But I'm always really impressed by the box and the designs. The quality of all the packaging is just absolutely beautiful. And it's vegan and it's environmentally friendly. And they use packaging that made out of potatoes. You put it in water, it disappears.
I think it's cool that it was set up by a mother-daughter duo as well. That's really, really nice. Because that shows, like, they're sort of sharing that witchcraft journey together in their own way, which may be where we are when our kids are older.
It'd be good.
If we're lucky.
Follow the hashtag on Instagram. It's like I'm still opening them, do you know, because people share the pictures. And I'm just like, oh, what you got? What you got? Let me see.
Sometimes it's nice to know what to have as well. Sometimes you don't know what you want. And like witches, we love collecting things. We love the goodies, whether it's books, whether it's trinkets, statues, shells, rocks, things like that, you know, things that you find out in nature. And I think sometimes you have your want list, but then there are things, all things that you want that you don't actually know exist yet.
Exactly. So that brings that to your attention.
Good way of like opening yourself up, isn't it?
I like the themes. They did one that was a water theme, and I remember being so into it, and every single item in the box I adored. Eventually they did the fire, so there's a few boxes in between the elemental themes.
Well, but that's something that we're doing, isn't it? For those that have been listening for a few weeks, obviously you'll know we're doing Mother, Maiden, Crone at the moment, but then afterward we're going to be doing the elements, aren't we? What I'd do is I'd do elements and then I'd do God and Goddess.
The next one will be the Crone.
We're in the position with that some of you have been in listening to these. You know, we said these may not resonate with all of you. You may feel like you skipped a stage or even felt, you know, afraid of or repulsed by a stage. We all have some experience of those archetypes. Our question this week from a viewer was, can men be witches?
Yes.
Yes. Yes,
basically.
Absolutely. There are a lot of male pagans. If you go to any pagan event, you will see lots and lots of men who practice magic. There are men who practice in circle. In fact, my circle is men dominated, I would say. There are more men than women.
Isn't it funny that it's just like associated with women?
Yeah.
And I've had somebody said to me, are they not wizards? And I'm like,
No, they're not. They're not. In fact, witch comes from the word wise. So men were originally called witch with an E at the end. So I don't know if that was pronounced witchy or witcher.
Witchy.
But women were called witcher with an A at the end. Ah. And it just means wise ones. So they're not called wizards or warlocks. There are people who identify as wizards and warlocks, but generally not in the craft that we practice. Most
paganism.
Men just call themselves witches. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to call yourself a wizard, you can. It is a pretty cool sort of image in my mind of a pointy hat and a long beard.
But yeah, there are a lot of men in the craft, and if there are men listening, then obviously as two women, we can understand that, especially going through the Maiden Mother Crone, that you might feel a bit out of sorts here.
We want you here. You're welcome here.
Yeah.
It is for everybody, and we're trying to be mindful of being open for everybody.
Yes.
And inclusive.
Yes. We're very, very interested in the differences between how men and women may practice as well as the similarities. My experience personally is that men are often very different in terms of witchcraft and tarot as well, but in a way that I really, really like. Thank you so much for listening. See you guys next time with the crone.
As always, thank you so much for listening to us again. If you like what we are doing, please review us on Spotify and other podcast apps. We'd love to hear from you with your thoughts. And we can be reached on Instagram, the_bell_witch_podcast. For questions, if you'd like us to discuss anything, please drop us a line. And we will see you next time. Bye.